Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute. As we record this podcast, Americans are going to the polls. To help us analyze the role of the media in this year's election, I am pleased to be joined by Lynn Walsh, an Emmy Award-winning journalist and Assistant Director of Trusting News, a research and training project that empowers journalists to demonstrate credibility and earn trust. Lynn, welcome to the Trustmakers.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Trusting News started in 2016 with the goal of equipping newsrooms with ways to demonstrate credibility and actively earn trust. What are some of the things Trusting News provides to newsrooms and journalists to help them earn trust with the communities they serve?
Our goal is to help journalists rebuild trust with their communities and their audience. A lot of that starts with making sure journalists are aware and understand what it's like to be a news consumer. Why we start there is that we know that being a news consumer can be frustrating. It can be an experience that leads to avoiding news content potentially, or leads people with feelings of anxiety. And so we start there because if journalists can look at it from the news consumer's perspective, we believe that they can then address the issues with humility and better serve the community. And so once they have that understanding, we then move to focusing on transparency and engagement. And those are the two main areas that we know can help build trust if journalists are more transparent about what they do and how they do it. And then also, if they engage with their audiences and listen, what do they need? What do they want? What's going to help them in their daily lives?
Let's take each of those, transparency and engagement. What are some of the ways that journalists can build trust through transparency?
A lot of times, mistrust and distrust in news comes from a misunderstanding about how the process works, or people making an assumption about how journalists do their job. And generally, that assumption is going to be negative. And if you think about it, it's just like if you don't know what a plumber does or what a nurse does, you're going to make an assumption about how they're doing their jobs. And in this case of news and media, it just so happens oftentimes those assumptions are negative. So people assume that journalists have an agenda, that they are biased, that they're not checking facts, that they're just publishing anything anyone says, even if they haven't spoken to them before. And what we have found is that when journalists take the time to actually say, hey, we actually did fact check this, and here's how it worked. Here's how and why we did this story. We wanted to actually help you when it came to what decision to make of where to send your child to go to school. And so we know that that type of transparency is something that can lead to more credibility. It can lead to more trust and can lead people to find that just the newsroom is more accurate and providing more context. From the engagement standpoint, it's actually a little simpler. If you think about just who you trust in your daily lives, they're probably people you know or brands or people you've interacted with online. Well, the same goes with trust in news and trust in people who are giving you news content. People want to have these relationships. And so how can we do a better job as journalists of being available to have conversations, but also listening so we're aware of what kind of content would be helpful to the communities? What do they need? What problems are they looking to be solved?
So on the front end, it's about sourcing more of your stories from the communities and the ultimate consumers of your news. If that's the case, can you give some examples of where you've seen people do that successfully?
Yeah, let's take the upcoming election, I think is actually a good example of where we are seeing more newsrooms take this approach. There's a term in the journalism world called the citizen's agenda. And it's this idea that instead of covering the election and covering politics more generally from the standpoint of what a politician or a candidate is saying, so instead of just covering what they're saying and what they said at their press conference, instead, you're going to your audience and saying, what problems do you want the government to help you with? What are you struggling with right now? You listen to those and then you decide, okay, our coverage of these candidates is going to be based on these topics. So if people say healthcare, they want more access to healthcare, you're going to make sure that you're asking candidates those questions. Maybe it's better roads. Maybe it's better education. Instead of letting the politician lead the conversations and just covering those sound bites and getting stuck in this news coverage that seems very polarizing, you're making it so that you're addressing issues that people say they need help with, and you're trying to force candidates to address those issues head on, which then ideally will hopefully lead to people being able to vote for people that they think will solve their problems, and then maybe getting those problems solved in the long run, because that's what's getting the attention.
We talk a lot on this podcast about the importance of listening to vital communities and your ultimate consumers. In this case, what methods would journalists use to listen to their communities? I'm guessing these aren't focus groups. So what are some of the successful ways that journalists have learned more about what the communities that they're writing for are interested in?
Well, you know, you actually could do focus groups. And we have had newsrooms do focus groups. But here at Trusting News, something we have found to be successful is something that we call a community interview guide. These community interview guides, we've created multiple different versions of them to help journalists have one-on-one conversations with people in their community with the sole focus to be on listening. So you're not reaching out to them for them to be a source in your story. You are asking them questions that aren't even saying, what are good story ideas? You're asking them, what problems do you see in your community? How do you see the things you care about covered in news? How could we better cover things that you care about in news coverage? Are there things that we as journalists are getting wrong about who you are, about your community? Are there things you'd like to see us change? The idea is meant to be based in listening, with the idea that we will get feedback that will help us shape coverage to better serve the people that ultimately I see journalism, and I think a lot of journalists do, as a public service. Like, we are there to provide them information.
I love the reframe away from, I think, the more typical journalistic question at that phase, which is like, oh, what should I be covering? Or what is our coverage missing? I love the way you've framed it in that community guide. You mentioned the U.S. election, and we're recording this episode a few days away from the election, and some of our listeners will be listening to it just before Election Day, some just after Election Day. Starting a little big picture at first, what are some of your observations about media coverage of this election?
I will say, as a news consumer myself, it is still a frustrating experience to, I think, see coverage of the national election and see national coverage of specifically the presidential candidates. And I think in some ways there are hints of it improving. And I'll bring up the last debate where you did see some real-time fact-checking in the moment. Some, not a lot, but some. And I know that real-time fact-checking is hard and that it's difficult, but I think it's something that's necessary and helpful to voters to have, instead of just allowing politicians to say a lot of things that may or may not be true. So I think there are slivers of improvement that I have seen, but I don't think it's where it needs to be, in the sense that the national media is providing content that is helpful and useful for people to make a decision when they go into that ballot box. And so specifically, I will say, if you take issues like immigration, you take issues like healthcare, I don't know if most people really would be able to explain where either candidate stands. And it's probably because the content that they are seeing isn't explaining that very clearly to them. It's focused on sound bites and kind of the loudest voice in the room, or kind of the most extreme perspective.
So my guess is, if we had a news executive in this conversation with us, what she would probably say is, every time we write a story about a policy issue like healthcare and immigration and we get deep, it's not getting the clicks, it's not getting the engagement. There are other stories that people are more likely to consume. How would you respond to that argument?
I would say these things don't necessarily have to be deep. I think it's sometimes more about the format maybe that they are in realizing that the way that people consume information has changed. And so if you take a traditional narrative story, some of this information is probably there about where the candidates stand. And I think that's what journalists would say. And that is true. But you have to kind of read it, and it's tucked in between a soundbite of what someone's saying, their opinion is on it. And it's not necessarily very scannable, I guess I would say. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know if it's good or bad, people like to scan. People want things bite-sized. And so can we, and I think we can, and there are some examples of newsrooms, I think, that are doing this more and doing it well, but can we pull out that information that's already in the story and say, if this person was elected, here's what it would mean for healthcare. Here's what it would mean for immigration. You could even go a step further, which we've seen some local newsrooms do when they've done short video explainers saying, if you're someone who would consider yourself pro-choice or pro-life, here's how you may vote on this. Actually connecting those dots for people could be something that is really helpful.
Can you give some other specific examples of media that is doing a good job presenting these policy issues in that bite-sized and consumer-friendly way?
Yes, I think Axios, with their smart brevity, is one that comes to mind. I know locally in San Diego, we have an Axios there now, and I find their content just extremely helpful. But even on a national level, I think it is. They will give you the highlights, but then I love it how they answer this question, like why this matters, which gives more fuller context. You are also seeing some newsrooms play around, primarily using AI to do this, to do like the long version of a story and a shorter version of a story. And basically people can toggle between the two or do a bulleted at the top of the story key takeaways. Now, if you're doing that, you don't want the key takeaway, I don't think, if your goal is to be useful or helpful, to be the loudest soundbite. That's not going to be. But again, getting at the, here's what this bill would do, here's what this person would do. If this proposition passes, here's what it would mean for you, right? You're getting at that impact and really clearly explaining it and making that connection for people.
Well, we recently had Jim Vanderhei from Axios on the show, so he'll be very pleased to hear that call out to him and his team. We focus a little on national elections. Let's chat for a minute about the thousands of local elections that are happening across the US and your observations about media coverage of those.
Yes. So that citizens agenda approach is one that we personally at Trusting News, along with Solutions Journalism and Harkin, have been working with newsrooms to try to get more newsrooms to do. And there are more newsrooms that are taking that approach. Before doing that, though, something that at Trusting News we are working and trying to get more newsrooms to do is get on the record about what their mission and their goal is with election coverage. So the reason this is important is because when people think about the media, they are lumping in local, they're lumping in national. Also, resources are very limited in newsrooms. The reality is you will probably not be able to cover every race, every candidate in a local election. When you don't cover a specific candidate that someone may like, they're going to make an assumption that you are doing that because you don't want them to win, you don't care about them. Well, the reality is probably that you don't have the resources or you're paying attention to the races that are the most contested. So what we walk journalists through from the beginning is explain how you're going to cover this election coming up. So are there certain races you're going to focus on more? If so, explain that. Tell people why. Tell people why you won't be able to focus on some of the others, or how or where people might be able to get information if you can't provide that context. So the idea goes to that idea of the transparency, right? If people see your coverage and they only see one story, which is often the case, they're not consuming all of our content. We have to remember that. How can we make sure that they understand what our goals and mission are? And again, also connect coverage. If you covered one candidate with one story Tuesday, then you covered the other candidate on Wednesday, connect that coverage online and on air so people know that you did cover both. It's just that you did it on opposite days.
This context of why we're covering this campaign, not that campaign, can you get really practical for a moment? How would you suggest that shows up in coverage?
First and foremost, we give newsrooms advice to create basically FAQs or an FAQ page that's going to say, what races are we covering this election? What candidates are we going to be focusing on? Why are we only focusing on these specific races or these specific candidates? One example related to politics more general, which newsrooms have explained, which I think is important, is in a lot of states, you have legislatures that are controlled by one party or the other. So maybe it's Republican Party or the Democratic Party, right, in that state. People are then confused why you only cover or focus on bills that are supported or sponsored by Republican candidates. Well, the reality is that those are probably more likely to become law. So you focus on those for that reason. And so explaining that can go a long way, because otherwise the assumption is that you're covering it because you want to see that pass or you want to see that fail. So this FAQ format of talking about what races you will cover, how you'll work to be fair, where are you gathering information from? We've had newsrooms answer questions about, will they be voting? I know that sounds like a strange question, but people are curious. Do your reporters vote? Do they donate to candidates? Are there any conflicts of interest? And so to answer those questions of how your team, and again, specifically with politics, how you work to check any bias and how you work to be fair.
And it's hard to have a conversation about local elections without talking about how local news has been decimated. And what is the impact of the great attrition of some of the wonderful local papers across this country? And have there been new outlets that are beginning to fill that void?
Yeah. One, you definitely are seeing news startups that are popping up that are primarily focusing on and trying to do news a little differently, and actually are very receptive to this idea of getting on the record and being very transparent about mission and goals. Sometimes the limitations of those startups are that their audiences are small, though, because they are just beginning. They maybe don't have the reach of the regional paper, the local TV stations, the local radio stations. So that is something that I like to see. I feel like, though, with the startups, we're not yet at a point that I feel like it's making up for some of the holes that have been left in the larger newsrooms. Now, you are seeing also some examples of some newsrooms trying to see how AI might be able to fill some of those holes that are being left by people being laid off. CalMatters has a great resource in California. Their voter guide is just incredible and amazing. And then they also have developed a whole democracy page that basically uses AI to listen to public meetings and provide information about how people have voted. And when I say how people have voted, how the politicians have voted on different bills, and to fill in some of those blanks so that if I'm a voter, I can now actually go see how someone I might vote for has voted across the year. How many times have they not shown up? How many times have they shown up? The other thing is there have been foundations that have stepped up to provide support for local newsrooms to do basic things like make sure there are voter guides. I think if you are someone who tries to seek out information before you vote, those voter guides can be extremely helpful. And when they're not there, it makes making these decisions really difficult. And so it is nice to see that there has been money put behind there. There are still concerns for me that I wish we didn't have to rely on foundations and we just were able to do this work anyways.
Speaking of foundations, I think there's also now a reliance for some of the bigger papers on billionaires. And they've been in the news, the billionaire owners of media companies in the last week or two around running editorials endorsing a presidential candidate or not. There's the stories around the LA Times and the Washington Post. I'm going to read you the first paragraph of an op-ed that Jeff Bezos wrote after he decided not to run an editorial in the presidential election. He said, "In the annual public surveys about trust and reputation, journalists and the media have regularly fallen near the very bottom, often just above Congress. But in this year's Gallup poll, we have managed to fall below Congress. Our profession is now the least trusted of all. Something we're doing is clearly not working." So the thesis of his argument was that part of why he decided to no longer endorse is to build back trust in the media. What's your reaction?
A lot of what he is saying, it's true. It is true. And I often, when it comes to opinion content produced by news organizations, I do question whether or not it's necessary, and it is something that news organizations still should be doing. Now, all of that said, and I would be glad to talk more about that, but it is news organizations and the news staff that should be making those decisions, not the owners. And I think that is where, for me, there is just this very clear line. So I personally am not sad to, I guess, see that these newspapers are not doing endorsements, because I do wonder how helpful they are. And it would be interesting to see if they've asked their community, do you want us to endorse, or could we do something else that could be more helpful? And I don't know if they've done that. I hope that they will after this. But as a news consumer myself, it's not something that's helpful. And we know that too much opinion that is out there can actually be more harmful and make the news experience harder to navigate. But again, it should be the news staff that is making that decision, not ownership. And I think that's where, with this situation and the LA Times, even though it is opinion content, and this isn't talking about the news department, I still think it should be those opinion staff members that are making that decision, not ownership.
It also seems, taking your tenets of transparency and engagement, the kind of sudden timing of both of these announcements probably didn't help for the credibility of them.
I think they're absolutely, the timing is something. And I think in the op-ed, I think Bezos mentions that maybe the timing was poor. And okay, yes, timing probably was poor. Like, you probably were planning this and or deciding who you were going to endorse before this. But I think the bigger issue, and I hope what this leads to, is more conversations in newsrooms about opinion content more generally. From a trust standpoint, we know that, especially when it comes to political coverage, when opinion content isn't labeled well, and a lot of the times it's not, because we use terms like letter to the editor, op-ed. Well, guess what? People don't necessarily know what that means. We need to use the word opinion content, and we aren't able to kind of clearly help people navigate through content anymore, like we were when a newspaper was delivered to them, right? They're getting this content from all over the place. And unfortunately, those labels are not always traveling. So then what happens is people see an opinion story, they think it's a news story, and now they think the journalist, that newsroom, is biased.
As we start to finish up this conversation, I know Trusting News has done a lot of work directly with newsrooms around this election. Would love to hear some of your positive observations, and perhaps more, unfortunately, there hasn't been much movement in this other area, observations. What are you learning from some of the work you're doing with newsrooms around the elections?
Like I said, we are seeing more newsrooms that are open to this approach of the citizens' agenda, this listening, this engagement, which I think is a positive thing to see. I wish we saw more newsrooms doing it. I don't necessarily think it makes the coverage and the work harder. It does take more planning, and it is thinking about your reporting process differently, because you're first having to start with that engagement and then deciding what to ask, instead of letting the politicians kind of control the narrative. So it is flipping some of those workflow things in a different direction, but not necessarily, I don't think, making it harder or more difficult. Something else that we are seeing when it comes to just the transparency part of it, and the idea that, okay, yes, let's talk about what our mission is. Let's talk about what our goals are. Let's be realistic with our audience that we can't cover everything. Here's what we will cover. And then also seeing some newsrooms really embrace this idea of how can we be helpful and useful. So creating explainer videos about ballot initiatives, about propositions that people are voting on. And then one other thing that I will add is newsrooms really making sure that they're taking time to explain the basics of voting. This is something that I think newsrooms maybe don't necessarily see as their role, but unfortunately, if people don't understand how ballots are counted, how elections are determined, who wins, and why does the AP determine who wins the election? Well, The AP does not determine that, but here's how that works and where that information is coming from. So some of those basic explanations about just how our government works, how the process works, we're seeing more newsrooms share that information. And that is really helpful because you're giving people a basis of understanding that gives them the on-ramp to then kind of consume the content that's happening, participate, and understand the importance of participation.
Well, our own research has looked a lot at the importance of trust in electoral systems for maintaining and building trust in government and all institutions. So I think that's a great point to end on. And it's nice to think that the media can play a positive role in that.
Yes. And we hope more newsrooms do it. And I think the one thing I would say, if you're a newsroom out there listening and thinking, oh my gosh, it's one more thing to do, the good news is there are good explainers that already exist that you can link to, whether that's the Associated Press, organizations like PBS, and just other places that you don't have to necessarily create this content yourself. You can link to what's there to still support that and provide that for your community.
Lynn, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate all the work you're doing in this space and for sharing your insights and expertise with our audience today. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.